the future of money is already heading in a direction of digital currency, and cryptocurrencies look like the medium in which money will take its next form. In today's show, we'll discuss what the official adoption of cryptocurrency means for you, your patients, and your practice. Stay with us. Welcome to another episode of OrthoThrive. I'm your host, Richie Gerzon. Today, we have crypto doctor Mart McClellan joining us. Mart serves as president of Macro Wealth Management and is also a charter member and thought leader of the Forbes Speakers Group. Mart, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Richie. Glad to be here.
So we spoke before, and it's great to have you back on the show. But for those who haven't seen that other episode, can you just tell us a little bit more about your career and how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, I'm a practicing orthodontist even to this day, but about 25 years ago, I was introduced to an individual who showed me sort of a different way of look at personal finance. I had some experience in different financial planning circles, and it wasn't really working that well for me. And so I met Tim Stride back in about 1997, and he showed me a unique system to sort of accelerate your wealth as opposed to just accumulate your wealth. And the system worked so well for my family and myself that after about 7 years of using a system as a client, I said, "Hey, Tim, we need to get this information to the dental world and the orthodontic world." And so in 2004, he and I partnered together and started Macro Wealth Management. So we've been in the financial services industry for about 17 years now. And it's definitely a unique perspective. You know, the fact that I'm an orthodontist, the trust factor is tremendous. And so it's been a great ride. We've been through a lot of market cycles. And so it's worked through every up and down. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. So you've experienced it all. So you're not you kind of know what's coming, or you can work with whether it goes one way or the other. You kind of know how to react with the market and your clients.
Yeah. And then, you know, everything that we recommend for our clients, we do ourselves. And so, you know, and we know how to, you know, get through all these different market gyrations. And our objective, of course, is to develop plans to work under all circumstances. And the best plans are those that work under the bad times. And anything better than the bad times is a good result.
Yeah. All right. So today we're talking about cryptocurrency, which is actually going to be very informative for me because I've been reading around it, but I haven't really dove deep into understanding what it is. So I'm going to be learning a lot. So yeah. What is cryptocurrency in the general terms?
Yeah, well, cryptocurrency is a very, very hot topic now. And really the main crypto is Bitcoin. Bitcoin came into being in 2009. People say, you know, what is Bitcoin? Bitcoin is really nothing more than a peer-to-peer digital currency. Yeah. And really, to break that down, or some people call it digital gold. To break that down, what is peer-to-peer? It's something that you can make a transaction without a middleman. So it's considered what decentralized. And so that's the big appeal, where you can sort of do things without, you know, intervening banks and other type of financial systems out there. And then it's digital, and the whole digital space. And we do transactions today in digital, whether it's credit cards or wire transfers and things like that. So that's not unique, but it is all digital. So it's all done on the computer. It's not, like a hard asset like gold, but it's run through the digital world. But it is a currency. And, you know, when you look at currencies, you know, people say, what is a currency? Currency is nothing more than is a store of value. Are you able, is it a medium of exchange? And, you know, can it be broken up into divisible units? And really, Bitcoin does fit all those things very, very well, even more so than, in my opinion, than gold. I mean, you can't devise gold into 8 decimal points, and you can't
keep
you can put Bitcoin in your pocket. And so it's a wonderful mechanism for transfer of wealth as well as currencies. And the nice thing about it is that the big appeal to me when I first was introduced to this 7 years ago, I've been doing cryptos since 2014, is that it's inflation proof. There's only a certain number of Bitcoin that will ever be made. There's actually 21 million that will be minted mined through time. And currently there are only about 18.5 million that have been mined to date since 2009.
What does it mean to mine a Bitcoin?
What does that mean? So what happens is it's all done through these algorithms. And so these miners are out there with all these very fancy, sophisticated computers, and they're out there trying to solve mathematical equations to actually earn a Bitcoin. And then whatever miner out there receives the Bitcoin, they get it sort of put into their account, so to say. And then they'll go out in the marketplace and they'll go, they'll offer it and somebody will buy the Bitcoin. And then now it gets put out into the world of all the different computers, because Bitcoin is peer-to-peer, so it's decentralized. So it's shared amongst all the computers in the whole world. And
yeah.
So people can go out and get the Bitcoin.
Interesting. All right. So what are the different types of cryptocurrencies? It's not just Bitcoin, right?
Yeah. So there are thousands of different Bitcoins, and they're just being created on a daily basis. And like anything in personal finance, there's the good, the bad, and the ugly. The core cryptos are Bitcoin and Ethereum. And, but there's all these different places that cryptos are coming into space, whether it's some decentralized finance, which is huge, where people are able to, invest in different type of banking institutions and transfer without paying all these high fees. There's these securities. One of the big things about cryptocurrencies is that you can sort of reclaim your identity, so to say, whereas, back in the big data, social media world, where we had LinkedIn and Facebook and Google Maps and all these places, they're following you everywhere. They know your every move, right? And so the blockchain or the cryptos enable you to sort of reclaim your data and sort of control that to a certain extent. There's actually a browser out there that I use called the Brave browser that you sort of control who can see you and where you go. And it's like Internet Explorer, Safari. And it's a very user-friendly web browser. So there's so many different ways of using these different systems, and people are thinking about them each and every day.
I'm hoping people are getting more interested in privacy and internet privacy. I think it's becoming more and more important. I know Google's even talking about reducing the amount of data they're collecting on you, and we're running Facebook ad, obviously we run Facebook ads for our clients, and iOS is, there's a huge message on there that Apple phones are going to change how they work and they're going to get less data. So it's going to affect how Facebook ads work. So I definitely see that trend.
It's a huge trend. I mean, people are just really concerned about, being censored or just being followed. And I think the more people has a little more control of that, I think that's what people want. I think they really do.
Yeah. So you mentioned blockchain. Is blockchain like the underlying technology of all this cryptocurrency?
Yeah, blockchain is just sort of like digital transactions, like a distributed ledger. If you think about like an Excel spreadsheet, they're sort of just Excel spreadsheets put side by side that cannot be changed. So it's immutable. And that's sort of the beauty of the blockchain. Once it's on there, it's there forever.
Oh, that is interesting.
It can't be changed. And Bitcoin was the first cryptocurrency that was built on the blockchain itself. And that's the underlying technology is it's just not Bitcoin. Bitcoin may not even be the future, although I think it's going to be a big part of the future. But the underlying technology of blockchain is what's being incorporated by all these different cryptocurrencies, and they're building all different types of blockchains for all different purposes.
Yeah, I think I even read about the potential of it being used in like the voting system just to get rid of a lot of the fraud.
Yeah. And I sure hope by the next election or the presidential election in a couple of years that this is actually incorporated, because it's a perfect way to prove one's identity.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right. So cryptocurrency is digital. That makes me wonder if it can be hacked. Like, to me, that's one of the biggest threats of anything digital, where you're putting any important information out there in the cloud.
Yeah, 100%. When you get into sort of the investment space of Bitcoin, which we'll probably talk about here in a minute, but yes, it can certainly be hacked. Nice thing about Bitcoin, it has not been hacked. So that's good. Yeah, the person who's developed Bitcoin is an anonymous person called Satoshi Nakamoto.
That's interesting. Okay.
it is, right? But he's an unknown person. People sort of think who that is, but they don't know. But the cryptography that he created has not been hacked. Now, some of the exchanges or the places where people will purchase or invest in Bitcoin and other places, of course, where there's lots of money, whether it's a bank or another financial institution, people want that money. And so hackers try to get into there.
Yeah.
And so there have been some places where they've been breached. Some people have lost some money, but for the most part, what my experience is that those places that have been compromised, they've made most of the investors whole, at least in this most recent hacks that I've seen.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I mean, better than a lot of banks have done for sure in the last 10 years or so.
Well, you think about it, right? There's always been bank robbers. There's always been bank robbers. 100 years ago, there's bank robbers, and now there's digital bank robbers.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll never change.
Yeah, right.
So what are some of the greatest benefits in general of cryptocurrency?
Well, I do think the biggest benefit is that you are taking out the middleman. You're taking out a lot of the unnecessary costs. People don't realize when they're investing in the stock market or whatever product they're investing in, there's a lot of underlying fees and there's a lot of different steps that people have to go through to sort of more or less pay for things. And so if you can cut out those issues, that's a big savings for the consumer. Another huge piece of the cryptocurrency from a global perspective is that a high percentage of the world is unbanked. They don't have a bank account. And so now with people having cell, but a lot of people have cell phones, right? So now what we're finding is that all these people in Africa, South America, in these more impoverished areas, they can actually set up bank accounts on their phone and not have to go through a financial institution, and they can trade cryptocurrencies through their phone at a very, very reasonable cost, as opposed to, you know, in olden days, people lived in America, they'd send it maybe to Europe or to Mexico. There's high wire fees to transfer money over there. Now they can transfer through cryptocurrencies for just pennies on the dollar. And so now if you're thinking about the whole world system getting into a system where they can actually have a bank for themselves and not have to go through their governmental institutions, which is, you know, controls the financial institutions, there's this huge benefits for those folks.
Wow, that's very interesting. I never thought of a lot of people being unbanked. I have never heard of that term.
Yeah.
So yeah, in a first world country, it seems crazy, but I guess
hundreds of billions of people, hundreds of millions, sorry, not billions.
Yeah, still, that's incredible. I mean, it's a huge benefit to them. All right, so are there any big drawbacks to cryptocurrency?
I don't really, my experience of using it, the drawbacks is the adoption, right? So the people's acceptance of something that is so new is difficult for people. But I think the biggest drawback, and I think it will change in the future, is that since people get involved with it, everything is under your personal control. So there are certain passcodes, there's seed phrases, there's all these intricacies of investing in cryptocurrencies that if you lose those seed phrases or you lose a password or you lose the ability to find some of those numbers, that money's gone forever. There's no customer service to say, hey, help me recover my money. Now that's kind of a drawback, right? People are like, I don't feel real comfortable with that because when you invest in it, you're sort of your own personal custodian. And, and so people there are ways around that, which we can talk about, but you know, there people don't always feel comfortable having that much responsibility with their money. And for sake of example, I mentioned earlier that there's 18.5 million Bitcoin that are out there in the marketplace now. Of that 18.5 million, there are 2 to 4 million Bitcoin that are lost forever, never to be recovered.
Wow, really?
Yeah, there's so they, you know, people lose their, as I said, they lose their passphrases, their seed phrases, their passwords, and they're gone. And they will never be recovered. So it can be a problem.
I guess when you're cutting out the middlemen, you're kind of taking on certain responsibilities. So
that's it. That's exactly right.
Cost and benefit. Okay.
That's it.
So are they considered securities, cryptocurrencies?
So that's a good question for many people. The SEC is trying to kind of regulate certain pieces of the puzzle. You know, are they securities? Are they not securities? Some are securities, some are not. So the answer is yes and no. Yeah. But it's still kind of being figured out. And so of course, the government and the SEC, they want to figure these out because that means potentially more tax dollars for them. So believe me, they will figure it out in some capacity, but not all are considered securities.
Okay. So if anyone can invent one, right? They can just create a cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
So how the tough thing for me is I tie, though it's not right now, it used to be money tied to.
You can make a Richie coin.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be very popular. It has the right name in it.
That's right.
You know, not that money's tied to gold now, but let's just, I think of it like that. Like the money that I have is tied to some sort of physical asset in the world. So how is cryptocurrency worth anything? What creates the value?
Yeah, so that's a big question. So the you know, the U.S. dollar, you know, used to be tied to the gold back in the, you know, early part of this century. In 1971, it was taken off the gold standard. So from that point moving forward, really the dollar is only worth what the government says it's worth. So it's sort of the good faith and credit of the U.S. government. So now the dollar just comes out of thin air. And so we look at Bitcoin and people say, well, there's no value there either. But when you look at it, it's only worth what people are willing to, you know, put forward towards it. And the value is that all these computers, all these people are fully engaged in what Bitcoin has to offer. And now they've obviously gained a lot of traction. And the reasons why Bitcoin has gone from pennies to almost $60,000 now is that people are starting to derive the value in that. So therein lies the benefits for the people who get involved. And now we're starting to see people say, well, there's really not much behind that. And that may have been certainly more of a discussion years ago when Bitcoin went from about 5,000 to 20,000 in 2017, 2018.
Yeah.
Then it crashed down to the, you know, very almost $3,000. But now it's the reason some of these funds are going up so high is because the big corporations are getting involved. Tesla just put $1.5 billion in. MicroStrategy, this company, put in $425 million. Mass Mutual, one of the most conservative insurance companies out there, just dumped in $100 million into Bitcoin. So when these
really when an insurance company makes a move like that, that should tell you something.
Yeah, that is a big indicator. You know, they're the most conservative people out there. And so when these big players, PayPal and Square, they're all getting involved with Bitcoin. And so now they have a vested interest in maintaining the value of Bitcoin because they're not going to let their investors down in the future. And so now the adoption is becoming much more, quote, mainstream, so to say.
Yeah,
so it's that's why we're seeing such big moves in Bitcoin recently.
Gotcha. All right. So why do some people say we've kind of come from the Wild West of money to the Industrial Revolution of money? What does that mean?
Yeah. So I wrote a paper for Dental Economics a number of years ago, and actually titled The Wild West. And then we just recently, another article will be coming out in Dental Economics in the next month or two. And I call it the Industrial Revolution of money because years ago, it was just, there were no corporations. There was very little regulation. It was more or less just individual investors like you and me investing in sort of these different cryptocurrencies, not really knowing, you know, what the future is going to bring. But now we've moved to the next level, sort of that adoption, what I just mentioned with all these big corporations coming in. Now there's ETFs being created, these big companies creating trusts with Bitcoin. So now we're starting to engage and on a certainly different level. The big boys are coming into play. And so now we're really, people who are getting involved now, I'm calling it, you know, generational wealth potential, like back when Rockefeller and Carnegie and all these guys were getting their start in their industries. We are still in the infancy of what we're looking at. I mean, to give you a little perspective on it, I mean, Bitcoin is only, the total market cap of Bitcoin is 1.2 billion-ish.
Yeah.
I mean, the company Apple is bigger than all the Bitcoin in the whole world. So it just gives you a perspective of, it is a very, very early time frame in the world of cryptocurrencies. All the cryptocurrencies is less than 2 billion. So, you know, it's
really,
it's just tiny. And so when I talk about industrial revolution, we're sort of at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Or, you know, some people say internet, you know, when the internet first came on board, you know, that was sort of, you know, you just learning how to do an email or setting up a website. You know, that was sort of the beginning. And you know, we've come a long way since, you know, email and website development.
Okay. So if a doctor's watching, would you advise them potentially to think about adding Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies to their portfolio? Has it gotten to that point?
That's an awesome question. So a recent research paper came out about 8 months ago from a big company in San Francisco that actually did an analysis on that. And they studied the benefits of considering adding some Bitcoin to an investment portfolio, like a Vanguard 60/40 portfolio, and what it would be like if you added 2.5% of Bitcoin to your investment portfolio, which obviously 2.5% is next to nothing. But what it found was is that just by adding that little bit of Bitcoin to your portfolio, it almost doubled your rate of return.
Wow.
Over that 5-year time frame.
Okay.
And the thing about it is that people will say, well, Bitcoin's very volatile. It's very, very, it moves all over the board. And that is absolutely the case. I mean, it can drop 10, 15% in no time, even 30%. But the volatility of it over time, the interesting thing was in those portfolios, when you just add just that little bit of Bitcoin, the standard deviation of those portfolios, which means the volatility, how much those portfolios fluctuate, is almost exactly the same.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So it's amazing. It was like 10.9 to 9.9. So the volatility, so the argument would be you're actually hurting yourself by not adding Bitcoin to your portfolio. Because yeah, the volatility is the same, essentially.
Hmm. Okay. So what would be the added value for consumers who want to use cryptocurrencies over current digital means of payment?
Yeah, so really the only added, well, there's a number of, a couple of them, but the main thing is just saving on costs. Because now people may be paying 2 to 3% in their business. You know, even orthodontic practice or Starbucks, and you swipe your credit card, you know, those vendors are paying maybe 2 to 3% for those services through Visa or MasterCard or where it may be. In the future, the incorporation of these payment methods with cryptocurrency, you're going to see those fees slashed down to, you know, next to nothing. And so, you know, the consumer, and hopefully some of those costs will be passed on to the consumer. And whether it's through lower interest rates or better rewards programs, you're seeing a lot of these. Even there's some Bitcoin rewards programs out there on.
Really?
You can buy products. There's a website called Lolly.com where you can buy products and they'll give you a reward in Bitcoin. And so.
Interesting. Okay.
So and if Bitcoin booms, right, it's like buying the product for free. So.
Yeah. Exactly. this doesn't sound like big banks would necessarily be happy about this change. How are they adapting to all of this?
Yeah, so of course they're not going to be terribly happy about it. But of course, when they're seeing a lot of money moving into this space, which it is, the financial institutions and the banks and the insurance companies, they want a piece of that action.
Yeah.
So, okay. And so they're developing their own ETFs, their own financial products. So where they can derive their fees from it. So, you know, they're not letting it go by the wayside. They're getting fully engaged. Morgan Stanley is just looking to buy an exchange, I think, in Korea. And so the big boys are coming into the space, but they were always somewhat restricted by the regulations, the SEC and other things about their ability, because, you know, to our question earlier, you know, is it a security? Is it not a security or not? So,
yeah. All right. So how do you invest in Bitcoin if you want to?
Yeah, the simplest way to do it is to set up called a Coinbase account. There's another account called Gemini or Kraken. There's a number of them. And what you do is you set up your own bank account, your neighborhood bank account, and you link it up to one of these exchanges.
Okay.
And then they more or less just wire the money from your bank into one of these exchanges. And then when you get onto the exchange, in order to get into these exchanges, you have to do some know your customer type of things, where you may have to give your driver's license or a utility bill, because identity, they don't want nefarious people sort of being engaged on these exchanges. They want to know who you are. And then once that money flows into these exchanges, then you have the ability to purchase a number of different cryptocurrencies, number one being Bitcoin, Ethereum, and many, many others. But those exchanges are called fiat to crypto exchanges. Okay. They don't have as many opportunities to invest in the entire crypto universe. Because as I mentioned before, there's thousands of different cryptos of many different flavors. And so if you want to get more engaged in some of those investments, then there's other exchanges called crypto to crypto exchanges where you have to transfer your money from the Coinbase account to another account, such as KuCoin or Bittrex. There's a number of them, Binance US. And so then you can move your money over there. And then once you move your money over there, then you can sort of, it's like a trading platform, like an Ameritrade trading platform.
Yeah.
Where you do it there. But as I mentioned before, some of the concerns are when you're moving all these money, you have to make sure that all the numbers are moved in proper, copied and pasted and moved over properly, because the onus is on you if you don't do it correctly. So
therein
lies the concern. And then the next level is that once you own these cryptocurrencies on Coinbase or these other exchanges, you don't want to keep them there for the question you asked before. There are hackers out there, and they want access any way they can into these exchanges. And those exchanges are susceptible to that. And so the way to get around that, there are two different types of wallets that you can put your coins in or your tokens in. It's called a hot wallet or a cold wallet. A hot wallet is nothing more than a wallet on your computer, your personal computer. And so you'll set up an account on a place such as Exodus. That's an excellent hot wallet.
Yeah.
And so you set up the account, and then you move your money from Coinbase over to the hot wallet. And now your coins are within your own personal space. So as long as you feel your own computer is secure and it can't be hacked, you know those coins will be safe. Now,
okay. To me, that's like, how is that ever going to happen? Because everyone's right. Computer can be hacked, right?
Exactly. So to get around that piece of the puzzle, that leads to the cold wallet. And the cold wallet is the ultimate safety measure for everybody's coins. And you really, you don't want to keep your money on the Coinbase exchange or the KuCoin. You don't want to keep your money out there. So you connect your computer, like a USB, to a little mechanism called a ledger wallet or a Trezor wallet.
Sure.
It plugs into your computer, and then you just transfer your coins from the exchange into that little USB.
Yeah.
Then you unplug it. Now it's yours. Nobody can get at it. It's totally lock solid. And so now it's like you have your own little personal bar of gold, right?
Yes. Okay.
So that can't be hacked. That is yours to be kept. And some people just keep it in their safety deposit box and just tuck it away like a piece of gold.
So yeah, that's what I would get, a safety deposit box for sure if I was to do that.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that is the most secure way to store and hold your cryptocurrencies. You don't really want to keep it out on the exchange. Hot wallet is good, but not the best, to your point about most people's computers are not always secure. So then you move it to the cold wallet.
Gotcha. Okay. So do you think, going back to orthodontic practices, do you think they need to start accepting Bitcoin in the future? Is this something that is a move they should make?
I tell you, if and when I have the opportunity to accept Bitcoin as a payment for my patients, I would do that all day long.
Yeah.
I would love that opportunity. And I can't wait for some smart person out there to sort of develop some healthcare mechanism to accept that as a payment for their orthodontic services. It's going to come. There's just no way around it. Just a matter of when. And so, to my point on the credit card, we all orthodontists, pay some pretty significant credit card fees.
You know,
to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars a year.
For sure.
If you can cut that cost down to thousands of dollars a year instead of tens of thousands of dollars, I think people will be all over that.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, speaking of this crypto digital currencies, our parent agency, Unimedia, we just had a chance to work with the artist. Hopefully I pronounced his name right. Beeple, AKA Mike Winkelmann.
Yeah.
He just sold his digital works at auction through Christie's, which is conservative, I think, for over $69 million. Then just this morning, we read about an architect who sold a rendered 3D house for $500,000. It was an NFT.
So yeah.
How, what is NFT versus Bitcoin? How are they similar? How are they different? What would
you Yeah, the NFT space, with NFT stands for non-fungible token.
Yeah.
It's probably the hottest, maybe 6 to 8 months ago, the hottest market was DeFi, decentralized finance. Now it's sort of moved to the this whole NFT thing.
Yeah.
And the reason that there's high value in this is that you can actually put artwork or anything of value and you can tokenize it. What that means is it makes it, it standardizes it, immutable, it can't be changed, and it creates ownership. So things can't be stolen. You can't counterfeit paintings. You can't sell things that aren't real to, you know, other folks out online. But there's a lot of people out there trying to sell fakes, whether it's art or music. I mean, Kings of Leon, I don't know if you know the group Kings of Leon.
Yeah, of course.
They just created their first non-fungible token for their music, their record. And so people will be doing, you know, collector's cards. The NBA is being doing big time with something called Top Shot. I think LeBron James has this NFT that just sold for just a ton of money. And so everybody's getting into the game of NFTs. Yeah, it's amazing. Beeple, I mean, $69 million. And the guy who bought that piece of art thinks he got a steal on it.
That's to me, I'm wondering, who are these actual human beings who are paying for this? You know,
Is it just...
Like, that just raises my eyebrows when I see something like that. Okay.
Yeah, it's amazing. And to your point, you know, to be on Christie's, you know, that's another type of that, you know, early adoption of acceptance of people saying, okay, this is legit, right? This is not something that's just some random people, you know, throwing out their own personal options. I mean, people look at Christie's as, all right, this may be a mechanism for selling digital art.
So when someone purchases an NFT, are they purchasing it with traditional currency, with digital currency? It doesn't matter. How does that work?
Normally it's just with digital currency. Yeah. Well, they'll use like Ethereum or something to buy it. Mm-hmm.
And you could just transfer that into regular dollars if you want, right?
Yeah.
It's always possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So I think I also read that you can profit on the second and third and fourth sale of the artwork. Is that something that happens?
Yeah, so that's actually kind of a cool thing. They're in all these things are more or less nothing more than software. And so some of these NFTs that have been developed for the artist, they sell the artist on the first move. Well, how it gets embedded into the software is that every, you know, depending upon which NFT it is, that if they sell it to another buyer down the road, well, the artist, which is, you know, the creator, of course, may get maybe 5 or 10% of each sale.
Yeah.
So that is really awesome because
this is like the royalty model for.
Exactly. It's just like the royalty model. And so many times the musicians and the artists always feel like they're getting kind of screwed out of things from the big players. And by, you know, this mechanism really enables them to earn the fruits of their labor and their talent.
So the NFT is new or is it just something we're now hearing about?
They've been around for a while. Years ago, there's one with on video games. So you could buy, you still can actually out there where you can buy the sword or you can buy, you know, machine guns and things that you can actually tokenize those things.
Okay.
You can sell them on video games. And so that's a pretty big market. And that's gained a lot of traction recently, but that's been around for a number of years. It's just though, just now recently, it's become sort of the next talking point of cryptocurrencies.
It's I have to admit, it's easier for me to wrap my brain around it because someone created something of value. They've just made it immutable, like you're saying. And then, okay, then we're just trading it. I get that.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you know an NFT is authentic and you're not being cheated on that it's real?
Yes. Yeah, well, that's a good question. So, I really can't answer that in a very – all I'm doing is you have to go with full trace, the trust of the token itself, because there's a number of different NFTs out there. The question is, who are these people? Right.
Yes. Okay.
So.
Yeah. Okay. I gotcha. So maybe it'll mature like Bitcoin did and kind of rise to the top one of these places. So
It will. It's just a question. It's, but the thing is, once it's out there, you know, it's it's on the blockchain, so people can see it as, you know, as a real piece of art or a real as a, you know, a music, whatever it may be.
Okay. So if someone wants to get into Bitcoin or NFTs or any other cryptocurrencies, what's the first step they should take?
Well, the first step is going to the Coinbase account. Now, you know, that whole mechanism is on the individual side, but there's a lot of dentists and orthodontists. They don't want to have to deal with all of that.
Yeah.
So because it is, when people start understanding it, it can get complicated and it get a little tricky. You have to be very, you know, organized in when you're moving things. But there are opportunities out there now. Actually, we're getting involved with a company. Actually, we just got more or less consummated just recently, where people can invest in like a kind of crypto fund. So you can, like, you're investing in a mutual fund for your stocks and bonds.
Yeah.
Now you can invest in a crypto fund, just like you invest in that. So you can just send money over, and now they hold the custody. So you're not responsible for the cold wallet or the hot wallet, because they're sort of, you know, holding your money in the crypto, just like TD Ameritrade or E-Trade or Schwab.
Oh,
so they custodia those things as well. So you have the opportunity to invest in crypto without all the nuances of doing it yourself. And so, but of course, just like in your stock and bond portfolios, there's additional fees in there that get embedded. But when you're looking at some of the rates of return that these assets have provided, you don't mind paying some of those fees when it's delivering these tremendous numbers. I mean, over the last 10 years, Bitcoin has been, 8 of the last 10 years, Bitcoin has been the number one asset of all assets.
Really? I have never heard of that. That's very interesting.
Yeah, it's tremendous where it's come from.
So if a doctor wants to get started, can they contact you to help them? Is that something you do in your services?
Yeah. I think we're probably the only dental firm in America that is offering crypto as a part of the portfolio management. So we definitely, because I've been doing this for the time I have, we definitely in sort of engrave that into our system. And that's just a piece. That's one of the many pieces of the model that we shared with you 8 or 9 months ago in the first podcast. Yeah.
So how should someone go about getting to reach you? How should they reach you?
They can email me. My email is Mart, M-A-R-T, at macro-wealth.com. Or they can call us at 309-689-8481, and we can share our information.
Awesome. And you have a really great book. It's an Amazon number one best-selling book. Just tell us a little bit about that for people who don't know.
Yeah, I guess you got one right here, a little copy of one. It's called Your Retirement Smile.
Awesome.
The premise of it is that what people don't realize, and from a financial planning perspective, is that dentists in America today, when they get to retirement, they will take between a 40 and 60% pay cut based on traditional financial strategies. And we don't believe in the traditional world, because we want to accelerate wealth, not accumulate it. And so when you work on the acceleration model like we do, when you get to retirement, you don't take a pay cut. So you have what we call 100% income replacement.
Yeah.
And the objective is when you have a full income, and that is as guaranteed as you want it to be, you can live you can spend and enjoy your money to its fullest extent. We all say you don't work all your life to put your money underneath the mattress. You work all your life to spend and enjoy it, spoil grandkids, take vacations, and
absolutely
in the end, give to charity. We have a great charitable strategy that our clients love.
Yeah. Thanks again for sending us copies. We really enjoyed it. Learned a ton.
Oh, you're very welcome.
So is there anything else you want to cover before we wrap up?
No, I really think we touched a lot of bases there. I really enjoyed it. And I really like the opportunity to share crypto with people. It's such a new investment opportunity for folks. And the more they educate themselves about it, certainly the better off they're going to be.
Yeah, I definitely feel a little more confident into investigating it now, because I was definitely completely confused on how it all worked. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's definitely a confusing topic. And but it's just like anything. I imagine back in the day, people thought emails and websites were confusing too.
That's so true. You know, that's true. This email thing. I think I read somewhere that like IBM just thought, you know, there would never be a desktop on someone in someone's house. They just thought that was a
right
kind of totally. Fad.
Right. That's just the nature of transformational technology, right? It just takes some time to embed it into our blood and our lifestyle. And so it's come in. And as I mentioned, it's very early in the game on Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies.
Awesome. All right, Mark, thanks for your time. Learned a lot, and looking forward to talking again.
Appreciate it, Richie. Have a great day.
All right, take care. I really want to thank Mark for being on the show today. I have to admit, I really didn't understand what cryptocurrency was before the show, and he did a great job of explaining it and what it could mean for all of us in the future. If you want to be a guest on the show, you have an idea for an episode, just go to orthothrive.com. If you want to get in contact with me directly, just go to richard@orthosalesengine.com. Keep grinding, keep thriving, and I'll see you next time.